right, folks, we are back on the flagstick.com T-Talk podcast. Stefan Tudorf here with my co-host, the wonderful, the beautiful, the only Scott McCloud. How are you?
You know what? After last week, is that a kiss up after saying I grew up in the 1800s? Is that what that is? You're trying to make up for it?
No, it's you're not off the hook. Like, it's early in the podcast.
So, all right. Okay.
You know, my thing is I'll keep you at a level I want you at. You know, ooh. I don't want you too high. And I don't want you too low.
All so, right. That's fair.
Just kind of keep you steady. And every once in a while, good, you know, a little compliment here. It goes a long way.
Hey, you know what? We all deserve a little shot every now and then, right? Just to keep us on our toes.
Yeah. And just, you know, keep us level, you know, shot of what, right? Shot of whiskey, just shot to the gut, anything. But what's new?
All good. I mean, unfortunately, snow on the ground and the golf rounds are dwindling, but the golf season still keeps going on. And that's why we're still on here talking about golf.
Yeah, I mean, it was and we're going to get into it. It was a big weekend for golf. Like, I watched a lot of golf this weekend. There's probably
all live.
A lot of live, I don't know, but you know, there's
we'll get to that.
A lot of reasons why, and we'll get to all of those. But you know, I'm getting a turnaround where I'm starting to get a little bit interested again, and it might just be, you know, the winter and realizing I won't be able to play for a while now. Or
I know the golf season is actually dwindling in this area. Because I see more people on social media that are cranky these days. Like, literally, I could tweet about anything and people are going to go off with like, a four tweet response. So that tells me golf season is kind of dwindling and people are. Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know, and we saw this in the springtime. You know, we're getting to a point, and we talked about that a little on the show. We got to the point where it was like March and April and people were, you know, obviously didn't know what was going to happen with the golf season. They were getting a little antsy. And then finally, as soon as they were able to, you know, get out of their cages and head to the golf course, then, you know, the social media world tended to calm down a little bit, at least.
Well, I mean, let's just like quick reflection on the year. Last year was a crazy year in Ontario, obviously, in the world, right? It was world, like, everywhere shut down. And then this year, the world kind of comes back and then it shuts down only in Ontario. You can't play golf for a while. And it was like out of nowhere, even though it was already open. And then like golf kind of got back to fully normal. Like the Flagstick finally came out. Like, it was just a crazy year. And then it was like, oh, we're going to have an early winter, get your rounds in. And then it was like, nope, we're going to have a late winter. And then all of a sudden snow on the ground out of nowhere. Second week of it's just been a chaotic year.
Well, about it. This day last year, it was the Masters was finishing up. So think about that. That's how bizarre things are.
That's crazy. And you know who put on the green jacket to Dustin Johnson this day last year was Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And this year, the guy, like, Tiger Woods talk, like, there's, he's just standing outside of like
a hotel.
Yeah, hotel photos. Like, that feel terrible for him, but like, it's just crazy that a year ago that feel like him breaking his leg feels like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But the last year and a half, 2 years, it felt like, you know, 5 years. I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, it has. And I mean, I think a couple of people talked about that. Ryan Belanger from Golf News Net was, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, there's been this 17-month run of golf and this compressed season and everything else. And I mean, it's just been crazy what has actually happened in that period of time. And we're only now heading into a time, you know, coming ahead where we're actually going to get us a little bit of a stoppage in play for what it is. But yeah, man, like, there's been no breather. It's just been on a train for 17 months in the world of golf.
It has been. Now we're just chipping away the swing rebuild. Coming up, you know, we had a good lesson last week, feeling good, felt like I was just striking it better. Yeah. That's why you get lessons and lights or whatever I just said. and you listen, you know, it felt good. It's crazy that like one session, it's like, I'm like itching to get back now where like 3 weeks before, if you were like, hey, you want to go play? I would have been like, is there any, like, there's nothing better I can do today?
Well, I guarantee you have to still temper your thoughts, because you're still going to have times that you're going to be frustrated. The key with everything, especially when you're working your golf game, is just to persevere and realize that, yeah, there is going to be highs, there's going to be low, but just keep doing the work. And, you know, you just happened to get a high last week because
I'm just excited for the work and the high was good, right? Yeah. But like, I'm excited to do the work, which will hopefully result in more of those highs than me considering not even playing because I'd just rather not deal with all the lows. So,
yeah.
Hey, this is a free plug. Free pub for go see Scotty. He'll help you. You know, he'll do some lessons. Let's get in the week that was, though.
Let's do it.
Don't need to break down my golf swing too much this week. Birdie, par, bogey, and honorable mention this week, as per usual. Where do you want to start, Scotty? Birdie, bogey, par, where do you want to go?
You know what? Let's start right with the birdies, and I know where we're probably both going to go. LPGA, obviously, second to last event of the year. What were your thoughts, and how much of it did you watch?
It was impossible to watch this golf tournament
live. But
live. So like, and then if you're on Twitter, you know what's happening. So yeah. I watched a little bit of it. I wanted to see how we got here because it felt like when I was kind of tracking it, you know, Lexi had it in the bag, and I'm going to get to Lexi in a moment. Let's go on the high of Nelly Korda as my birdie.
See, Nelly had it first though.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that, but you know, Lexi Thompson, Tom, why do I can't say names lately? Why it is Lexi Thompson, but I stuttered. I almost call her Thomas. Lexi Thompson, at the end of tournament, like she should be the vet that puts her foot down on the throw and doesn't bogey the last two holes to go to that playoff, right? So she is my honorable mention as a bogey. Actually, it's a back-to-back bogey. Bogey train is the score I'm going to give her my honorable mention. Ouch. But my birdie, it was a bogey train. Yeah. My birdie definitely goes to Nelly Korda, and I'm going to break down why, but you're aligned on that for a different reason. You're going on the tournament itself, so why don't you break down that? I'm going to go further.
Yeah, before you get to where you go with it, just her resilience, you know, the fact that she made a triple bogey, looked like she was cruising along, looked like it was thrown away, and you know she said it herself, she was beaten up by it and didn't think that she was going to be in there, but she realized, you know, she was still in it and still could factor in the event. And you know, I guess that's the biggest thing, is that resilience is such an important factor as far as all athletes in the world to, you know, keep trying even when you don't think you still have an opportunity to win. And the fact that she did that, and then obviously made the putt on 18 and then made the one again in the playoff to win it, it just proves even when you think you're down, you might still be in it for sure.
Yeah. So my birdie is just like 2021 for her. And I just want to break this down. 2021, she has now four wins. One of those being a major, picks up Olympic gold. And I'm going to ask you this. Is she grossly underrated? This is the one answer. It's grossly underrated. I want that on the record. Or is she appropriately rated?
I think appropriately. I think the difficulty is that there's been so many great players that have had incredible seasons with double that number of wins, but not necessarily winning an Olympic gold medal. I think if she caps this season with a win next week at the CME Globe Tour Championship or CME Group, you know, it could obviously make it something super, super special, but she's still young. I guess that's the aspect of it, is that
that's where my head's
at. I don't want to sit here and rate her at this point because, you know, her story is far from written at this point, just as we talked about Lydia Ko last week. And, you know, while she's been around for a long time, you know, and she's got, you know, lots of wins. I mean, you know, what's left ahead for Korda? I mean, how many more Olympics is she going to play in? How many more majors is she going to play in? And, you know, the cool part for her is that she's done this in the shadow of her sister, and she's outshone her sister. In fact, even though her sister is older and obviously came out and was the, you know, the winner on tour, and here comes Nelly, you know, roaring in off the, you know, the minor tours and whatever, but man, she has made her mark now. For sure. And it'll just be fun to watch, and trying to figure out what her potential could be is just, it's mind-boggling, really.
Yeah. Realistically, to answer your question, she could probably play in four more Olympics, which is insane.
Yeah.
That gets her to 39, right? She could play in more after that. The reason, like, I do think there almost is a little bit under underratedness, as you kind of highlighted, because of her sister, but also just like this year is, if this is the cruising speed, like, let's not even, I don't even know if she's in gear, right? Like, she's in a gear. Like, is she in second gear? Is she in first gear? Right? Like, she can fly from here. Could it go up? Could she pick up more wins? You know, that's a, it's a really good stretch right now. So I don't know. I can't say she's grossly underrated. I think she's underrated. I only gave the two. So then I have to say she is appropriately rated. I just think we're not giving her enough credit that we have a superstar on our hands right now. And it just, every time I see her play and I see her on these the stretch from like basically from June to now, right, where she's on the stretch, I just want this, like, a combined tournament, the men and women, the best of the best. Like, I want to see her battle John Rahm on a Sunday and see what happens. I think it just be so good for the game.
Well, I think the one thing for her is it's going to be good to see whether this season is an anomaly or whether she can back it up and do it again in another year. And not to say that there's been a lot of players that have come out and won this much in a single year and then, you know, disappeared, but you know, it could happen. You never know, but it also could go the other way. It could be the stepping stone, as you mentioned, it could be the stepping stone for something greater. I mean, you know, four wins, how about six? How about eight? Who knows what she's capable of? And the confidence that she's going to gain from this year and all those situations, which is exactly what I'm talking about, that resilience, those will benefit her going in the years forward. It's that scar tissue that, you know, makes you stronger. It's not the walkover wins that makes you stronger. It's the ones that are unexpected and the ones that you fought through that prove you can do it in the most extreme circumstances. And that becomes super important when we start to talk about majors as well.
100%. Easy transition over to my par this week. And my par goes to Rory McIlroy, and I'm kind of going on the whole year too. But I mean, in news this week, you know, comes out that he's separated from new swing coach, Pete Cowan, however you want to say it. I think it is Cowan, if I'm not mistaken. Names just not working for me the last couple of weeks on T-Talk. But, you know, he's gone back to his old coach. He's come out on this week talking about his, like, you know, carbon footprint at the PGA Tour, at the European Tour Finals or whatever, which is just like, now we're doing this. Like, you know, you play golf for a living, right? I don't think your carbon footprint's never going low unless you want to start taking a boat across the sea to Dubai. It's just been a weird year where it's like these things have happened, but then like the Ryder Cup disappointment where it's like, you know, everything in the media seemed good. And then you actually look at it and the guy made $4.5 million last season on the PGA Tour in 21 events. He's played one event this year on the PGA Tour and he won it. And now he's over, you know, the race to Dubai, you know, he could win this. It's just this weird thing. It's like, I just don't know what to expect of Rory, but he was where Lexi was. He was Lexi Thompson a few years ago, right? Where at that same age, superstar in the making, you know, how many majors is he going to win? Is he going to pass Tiger, right? And now, you know, he's in this kind of crossroads in his career, but people are almost making it seem like it's worse than it is. And then you actually break down the numbers and you're like, damn, Rory's just Rory. Like, that was just another Rory McIlroy. So he's just a part.
And I think that's the value in letting stories play out versus trying to predict them. I know it's fun and we do it lots in media and we, you know, try to have predictions of what's going to happen and estimate what's going to happen and look what the potential of an athlete is. But in the end, that's just entertainment, really. I mean, all you can do is just sit back and let it go and see what happens. And, you know, if there's expectations of Rory, they're ours. They're probably not his. He's going to have his own goals and objectives. And I guarantee he's probably not disappointed with the year, even if somebody else is. I think people just want that hero story. They want that last chapter to be so good. They want that, you know, that story to play out where all of a sudden someone is, you know, contending for Tiger's number of majors and things like that. I mean, there's a reason those players are anomalies. I mean, just it's too hard to do. And we should just be happy that we get to watch a guy like Rory play and that we have solid superstars in the game that, you know, they're not all going to be Tiger, but damn, they're still fun to watch.
Yeah. Over under, I'm going to make you guess here.
Just as we talk about predictions.
And we're this is fact. This is a fact. Over under and take out the actual... Actually, I don't know. Over under. Has Rory made over or under $57.5 million? On the PGA Tour.
On the PGA Tour. Yeah. I'll take the over.
He has. He's made $59 million. But I'm still wondering. I'm looking at here. I don't even think this is taking into consideration what he won when he won both FedEx Cups, right? Because I believe
That's not official money. So that way.
Yeah. So like you can add another. So in 2019, the guy made almost $8 million. And that's with, and then he obviously won the FedEx Cup. It was another 10, I believe, in 2019. Yeah. $17 million. Man, it must be nice to be Harry
on the course.
Yeah, on the golf course.
Like let alone Europe.
Harry Diamond.
Yeah.
Like has the best gig in the world.
Sure, why not?
But like that. Oh, look at so good. You get a caddy for one of your best friends and yeah, you know, I took home a smooth 500k or whatever he probably got paid. He probably gets paid $1 million a year
being Rory's buddy. Yeah. Like he might give him just a salary with some bonuses.
Yeah, what a gig. What's your par for the week, Scotty?
Par for the week for me this week. I don't know if you saw, but PXG came out with a new set called the 0211Z set. Z set, obviously, in the States. $1,695 for a 10-piece set. Includes a pat and a bag. Really, it's a hat, right? Right. But I love the concept. But I'm really surprised that, you know, with the demand for emerging golfer equipment and the need as well to create that sort of brand loyalty that more manufacturers haven't jumped into that. So kudos to PXG. More of a wonder why more manufacturers are not kind of tackling that at this point and using that as a gateway to help some more brand loyalty, especially among the people that are coming to the game that really don't have a history in the game. So it's a par for two ways. Good for them, but I wonder why other ones haven't done it.
Yeah. Do you think it's because of, you know, the golfing population that has bought those sets in the past, they were of lower quality. Like, you know, like brands would do these in the past and they wouldn't be their top end stuff. It would just be kind of their lower end stuff. The clubs in that set, you couldn't buy off the wall. Right. Like, I wonder if they just didn't, you know, make enough money.
Yeah. And I shouldn't say that manufacturers have been totally absent from that category. I mean, I know Cobra's had a good set that they do, especially for women.
Adams killed it.
Right. Mark of yeah. So there's been a number of them. I just don't know at this time why there haven't been more to jump in there. So, you know, again, it's not a big niggle, but it's just a throw out there as far as a par, but good for PXG doing that.
That's fair. That's a good par. I got one more bogey for the week. My bogey just goes to all the TV coverage in general. I'm going to go starting with, you know, the Martin Trainer talk. Like, shout out to Martin. Guy has had a very difficult career, to say the least, right? He had me caddy for two events. That's how difficult this guy's career has been. And what was it? He's made 14% of the cuts on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And they talked about this guy like he couldn't play golf. They were they had one line that it actually made me mad. They said when he won on the Puerto Rico Open, he hadn't been playing good golf leading into that. How the heck did he get on the PGA Tour then?
Right.
You know how he played great golf? He Mondayed into a web.com event. He won that event. He won another web event. He won on the Latin American tour all within this. And then he wins the Puerto Rico tour all within like the span of like, I don't know, 18 months, two years.
It was a fast That's track.
Pretty damn good golf if you ask me. So like that annoyed me. You couldn't watch the end of the finish of the LPGA Tour season. They bumped the PGA Tour for Champions Tour, which is like the PGA Tour's like, that's what sells your advertisement, everything, and also you're bumping it for the Champions Tour on like a Friday or something.
But it was it was their tour championship, to be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, it was Friday. It just felt like a horrible. I love
weird weekend. It was a weird weekend for TV coverage for sure.
Gino Benelli had a tweet was like, sat down at the bar to watch the end of the golf, and now I have to watch on my phone. And then he's like, I only got 10 minutes of free trial. And I responded with like, welcome to what all of us have to deal with as fans of the PGA Tour and of golf.
Yeah.
Like this is the product experience they give us every single week. And a bogey might be nice. Bogey might be nice.
I agree. Definitely. And, you know, relative to that, as far as watching that tournament, the only birdie that I, you know, there's a couple birdies that could come out of that PGA Tour coverage or whatever. A big thing for me is the fact it showcases Memorial Park in Houston, which is a municipal golf facility, but it's also the centerpiece of a 1500 acre park and urban environment in Houston that's been around for quite some time. Some philanthropists have supported it, made sure it has developed. It's for about more than golf. They have everything that you could possibly imagine in those 1500 acres, but it's a great example of what can be done when people are willing to look ahead and be futuristic about the possibility of using a facility that includes golf to take care of the people that live there. And I think that's a great showcase in the fact that it's a quality golf course that 10 under won it for Jason Kokrak. It's a hard enough golf course that way that, you know, Tom Doak was able to do there. But at the other side of it, you know, you and I can go play it. Joe Blow can go and play it. Anybody can go play it anytime they want to just put up their green fee and away they go.
I don't know how we haven't even brought up Jason Kokrak this week. I mean, barely talked about the PGA Tour really in general this week so far, but that guy, I love this guy's game. You know, our feelings on this podcast, we like the big boys.
Yeah.
You know, we like the thick boys. We root for them. We pick them in drafts. They're our guys. Kokrak is a player. We love Kokrak. We got to get to our interview this week. Before we do, Scotty, why don't you hit your bogey and then let us know who we're chatting with this week.
Yeah, just a quick one here. HR management in the golf industry continues to be a challenge. It's this time of year when all of a sudden we see a lot of turnover at golf courses. We see hires with superintendents, golf pros, and so forth. But I see a lot of quick hires all the time. And I see a lot of people that get hired and end up being fired very quickly. I just think in general that there needs to be a greater depth of HR management in the industry and, you know, going beyond just a resume, because I think what ends up happening is that clubs end up having to rehire. It just creates more turmoil within their clubs, within their staff. And it's an overall issue that could be avoided if, you know, the proper hiring practices were done in the first place and, you know, things were taken care of properly.
As somebody that runs a recruiting team for a very well-known company in Canada, hiring is extremely difficult.
Yeah.
And the golf industry probably has been doing it on very old ways that just never have changed. And probably could use some outsider help. I agree with you on this. I think you need to hiring needs to be way different, and hiring completely changed in March of 2020. And if you can't figure out why that is, then you probably shouldn't be hiring people in the first place. If you actually are interested in chatting about hiring, it's a passion of mine. Reach out to me, because I think there's ways we can do it better. You need to be changing the way you do it. I love that. It's much more than the resume. I wouldn't even be looking at your resume first. That should be almost the last thing you do to potentially make a decision. So, I think it's a great bogey. We could dive into that. I would love to dive into it more, but we can't leave our guests waiting, Scotty. So who do we have?
Yeah, we've got Blair Bercy this week, who finished second in the points list on the Mackenzie Tour PGA Tour Canada this year. Got a win. He also happens to be from Newfoundland, which is a part of Canada that is pretty small in population and has not had a lot of pro golfers coming from it. So I think everybody will enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the podcast, Blair Bercy, who is a winner this year on the Mackenzie Tour. You know, I just happened to play with him this year at the PEI Open and the Pro-Am, and it's good to catch up again. How you doing, Blair?
I'm good, Scott. I'm good. How about yourself?
We're doing okay. We're been looking forward to this conversation for sure, especially considering how you finished your year on the McKenzie Tour. But kind of before we get to that, though, I think a lot of people need to know a little bit more about you. And I know you've told your story a fair bit, but I think it's an important story in the fact that, you know, you're a guy who comes from Newfoundland. We have not had a lot of golf pros or a lot of even college D1 college golfers coming from Newfoundland. So why don't you give people a little synopsis of the elevator pitch of Blair Bercy?
Oh my God. Elevator pitch. I don't know about that, but I can give them the background on myself.
Sure, please do.
Gander, which is kind of a middle-sized community relative to what's the standard in Newfoundland, and born and raised there till I went to university, played junior golf there. Looking back on that, that was kind of crazy as I went into an amateur. But I grew up playing predominantly hockey, just the same as everybody else. And then golf was kind of my summer sport, really enjoyed it. And just did that every year, would kind of rotate back and forth and happened to kind of get into a place on a quarter scholarship in Utah and ended up pursuing golf and my academics in the U.S. But Newfoundland is not the norm. It's definitely not a hotbed for those who are pursuing either collegiate or professional golf, but it just happens to be where I'm from, and some people kind of know me as that, but I don't really see it as too big of a deal. I mean, it's obviously presents some challenges at an early age, but a lot of the best players of our time have come from cold weather climates, be it Jack Nicklaus or like Jason Day lives in Ohio, or even you look at guys now like Henrik Stenson coming from Sweden or Victor Hovland. So I grew up in a very cold easterly climate, but it was a great upbringing and got to play a lot of team sports and grow up in a nice community and wouldn't have changed it if I could.
So obviously you don't speak like a normal Newfoundlander that you would have met. Is that something that went away once you went to college and everyone didn't understand you, or did you work hard on that when you were younger, or am I just assuming a lot on the Newfie culture right now?
No, I definitely didn't ever work on it. I never really thought about it. It's just like, I've been living predominantly in other places now for quite some time, so it kind of wears off. But it's funny, whenever I go home, like the dialect will kind of come back a little bit, and it's definitely not something that you would ever have to work on. I think that would be kind of cringy if you worked on trying to either lose or gain an accent. But definitely over the years, I guess maybe my dialect and tone has changed in my voice.
What now, about Florida though? Like, Florida is a completely difference than Newfoundland. Florida, like
that can be a whole podcast in and of itself.
Yeah. Like, what is, like, I mean, obviously you've been around, it's not like you just got to Florida, but are there culture shocks still going to Florida? I find like you still have it vacationing in Florida. Now you're living there, coming from Newfoundland. Like, do you still get some culture shocks? Like, hey man, this is why Florida's Florida.
I think I don't really experience culture shock so much in Florida, although I do see things fairly often. I don't want to like stereotype too much, but often in rural settings, I'll see some things where I'm like, oh my God. But I think I definitely experienced a little bit of culture shock going to Utah when I went to school as a 17-year-old.
Had you visited it before?
No, well, yeah, I did. In my senior year, I went on an official visit. But obviously, those visits are so quick, right? You're in and out in 48 hours. So when I landed, everything, obviously, geographically, politically, socially, religiously, the whole area and my school is very different than everything I had ever really known. But I mean, people around me know that, like, I don't really let too much kind of bother me. I'm pretty chill about most things. So I was just kind of went with it, and I ended up being really glad I did, because I think it's really important for you to get out of your comfort zone. And I'm really pretty glad I stuck with that, even though that there were a few things that were quite shocking to me in my first couple of weeks when I got to Utah that I didn't even really know until I got there. But all in all, it was Florida. You definitely see some things that are just like, I think there's like a hashtag of like Florida man, of like certain headlines over the years that have been quite funny, but I don't really know too much of a culture shock now. That might be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. So how do those things though sort of benefit you? I mean, like you said, you're not fazed that much. You sort of accept sort of what's going on around you, and you know, you kind of make the best of the situation. But you know, layers upon layers add to who you are. How do they round you out and help make you a better person? Really,
I think it makes you, yeah. Like obviously, this conversation falls within the context of golf and that. But I think traveling and being in different environments, not only definitely in my circumstance, I felt like it made me a much more mature person very quickly, and I think it made me a better golfer as well because I got to see a lot of different environments and play in a lot of different settings. But yeah, traveling's been a big part of my life since I was about 14. And obviously, there's not many tournaments in Newfoundland. So that may be one of the more unique things that I failed to mention earlier. But I got very comfortable traveling at a young age. So I think that's definitely become, yeah, I don't know if you'd say more well-rounded human being, but definitely feel like I have maybe a few more life experiences and aeroplane miles than the average 24-year-old.
So. And the traveling's kind of done now for the season, right? You've kind of settled in Florida for the off season a little bit. We talked before off air that, you know, Q school is just wrapped up and pretty big disappointment there. Why don't you just walk us through that week and, you know, how you've gotten out of bed now to figure out how you're going to get going forward.
Well, I mean, multiple weeks for me. I mean, I got through first stage nicely and scores were very low at my site. I went to the St. George, Utah site and birdied my last hole to get through by two. Played very nicely. Didn't really make a ton of putts, but gave myself a ton of looks and shot 17 under. And then went straight up to Victoria to finish the Canadian season the week after. So then that went well. And then
that went well. I like how you say that, but we'll get back to that.
I had about a week and a half in between, and I went home to see some family for like 36 hours. And then I went back out west because my second stage was in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I liked the golf course. I was comfortable in the setting. It was at elevation, which I played a lot in school. And you know, there's no excuse, right? You either make it or you don't. It was my first crack at it. I was playing in the final group, the third round. So I put myself in a great position. And whether it's Q school or a mini tour event or a PGA tour event, if you shoot 73 your last two rounds, generally you're not gonna be as successful as what you wanted to be. So I mean, looking back on it, I learned from a couple situations that happened where I can take some things away from it and become a much better player from it. And I know that, I mean, I only missed by a couple shots, so I know that with much less than my best stuff and mismanaging a couple of situations. Like I said, I only kind of missed it by that much. So, I mean, that gives me, if there was any way to leave Q school unsuccessful, feeling good about myself, that's definitely how I felt. And I take away, it's cliche. You always hear guys say taking away the positives, but I really am. And I feel like that's going to kind of make me bounce forward instead of backwards.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've had to deal with some adversity in your life, had some health scares, you know, just before you're going to turn pro, and we don't need to dive deep into that or whatever, but it certainly gave you a lot of perspective on life in general, for sure. And then, you know, we go into this pandemic and you get a year where you're not sure what's going to happen. You're not sure if you're going to have any tournaments at all, and you get a little extra life with the McKenzie, you know, tour does a little series, and you start to gain some momentum. You get a couple wins on mini tours. How did all that help you going into this past year, which, you know, you found success on the McKenzie tour?
Yeah. I mean, Scott kind of Pritchard with McKenzie tour always kind of laughs at me, but every time I see him, I always thank him for putting those events together. But I mean, in the last 2 years, like it's uncertain for everybody, and obviously professional golf isn't their more priority, but just incredibly grateful that there have been opportunities to play within Canada, because those stepping stones were invaluable to me and in my development, both as a player and a person. It gives you something to look forward to as well as compete and get better at your craft. So I mean, like, I've found over the last couple of years, it's been less and less structure. So I've tried to employ more and more structure in my day. So my golf coach has helped me with that, and a lot more kind of making sure my habits are right. And I think that's kind of led to a little bit more of the success this summer that I experienced.
I want to get into those habits and everything and kind of where we're going, but I'm curious. We'll wrap up the McKenzie tour. Obviously you picked up a win out there. You kind of brushed over it a little bit, but like, you know, who else should we be looking for out there? I feel like that tour got completely swept under the rug this year as it was only Canadians basically playing out in Canada. Like, who are some players out there that like we got to watch out for? I know I called the first winner somehow and Brendan Leonard, and that guy continues to play well everywhere. But like, who are some other names out there that we got to watch out for that you got to play with?
That's an interesting question. I think you're going to that question probably have a much better answer in a couple of years. There were some younger guys that maybe didn't play great, but you could kind of see some of the pieces were there. There's a guy from Ontario, Sudarshan Yelamanjaru. Really young. I think he's like maybe 18 or 19. And this is probably his first stretch of events that he had ever played. And I played with him a few times. I thought that he hit some shots that were pretty impressive. And I mean, we've all got areas that we need to work on, and Sudarshan or myself are no different, but I thought he was a good player. Noah Steele, obviously, I mean, played very nicely in Toronto, shooting, I believe it was 22 or 23 under, and I played with him the final group. That was very impressive to watch. I think everybody was kind of watching him already, but I think when I think about under the radar guys, nothing really jumps out to me. I think there were some, I was a little disappointed not more of the Americans came up, given that I'm sure there were a lot of fully vaccinated guys that didn't make the trip. But I mean, even a guy like Anthony Brodeur, who obviously like is known for being the son of Martin, but Anthony is a great player, and I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with him and kind of become buddies with him. Like, he's just kind of getting into golf, let alone pro golf, and he just won a huge mini tour event like a week ago down here.
Isn't that annoying though? Like, he's just getting into it. It's like, yeah, there's a win. But
people develop at different rates, but I mean, I think Anthony for sure is someone that could be kind of up and coming for sure.
Yeah, it's just like I just those people that are just good at everything, and it's like, just give me like one of them, you know what I mean? Like, anything, and then they're like good looking and tall too, and have hair. And now I'm just preaching. I want to know. Let's talk about your off season now. What's the plan? Are we going to hit some mini tours? Like, what's a day to day going to look like? I just want to know the breakdown. Like, what's tomorrow even looking like? You sound like structure is really in place. So I'm assuming like I got this date. This is the Hooters tour. I got this date here. The Hooters tour probably doesn't exist anymore anyway, but you know what I mean? Like, break us down. What the next couple months look like.
So basically, I mean, it's been a long summer for me. I played a lot of events in a row with Canada and then added Q School to that. So I kind of really like to periodize things of like a little bit of time off, and then I build and my skills that is, and then try to compete for a stretch and then kind of repeat. So I had been preparing for the RSM pre-qualifier on Monday and hopefully the event, but that didn't end up working out. So I just finished up with that yesterday. So today was a day off for me. I'll probably take one or two more, and then I'll begin building up again. I'll play some bigger development tour events in the middle of December, some that have high enough amounts of cash at stake to where like you really feel like you're playing for something, and that usually draws a good field. And then I'll shut it down pretty good for Christmas. I find taking some time away from the clubs to be very helpful for me, as long as it's timed appropriately. So I'll probably take a good solid 3 weeks away from hitting a golf shot. And then when I come back down here the second week of January, it's going to be about a month of prep to get ready for the Korn Ferry Monday qualifiers and some of the PGA Tour pre-qualifiers. And then I'll play the odd development tour event, but I'm probably not going to play many of the smaller ones. I'll probably just play the bigger ones. Those that are either 2, 3, 4 days with kind of higher amounts of money, like I said.
And I mean, you mentioned money a couple times and making it almost worth it for a guy in your situation. Like, are you looking at, hey, like based on everything I'm saying, if I don't make a dollar in between now until the McKenzie tour season starts up, like, how am I going to, like, how do I balance all of that? Like, it sounds like you got every, based on what I'm hearing so far, we've only known each other for what, 24 minutes. I'm like, it sounds like you probably have like each meal highlighted to a dollar in case you don't make any money. No, up until
I mean it's easy if you get to that point, a lot of your day ends up becoming budgeting. But I have a rough kind of guideline for my expenses and where I want to spend what. Obviously, until you make it on the PGA Tour, the financial aspects of it can be difficult, which was I got rubbed in yesterday after I missed at the RSM Monday. I drove by a field of 156 BMW courtesy cars. but
it's a different world out there.
Yeah. But I mean, it is what it is. But no, I'm fortunate. I've been supported very well by a couple of companies back at home and some private investors. So I've been helped along the way quite a bit, and I am forever grateful for those people that helped me with that. So my situation is a little different. So I'm not terribly financially strained, but at the same time, I kind of tell them, hey, like having too much is just as bad as having not enough. So I try to keep my finances kind of obviously in order and not too much, put too much strain on myself, but also you want to remain urgent and urgent enough to where you're hungry to play well each and every time you tee it up.
One thing that you mentioned there, you talked about your habits, and you know, I noted when we were down in PEI and seeing how you played, seeing how you went through your pro-am round, seeing how you practiced afterwards, a little bit different than maybe some of the players that are maybe taking some things a little bit casually, let's say. You're obviously got a great focus on what you're trying to do and the goals that you have. How has your team around you, especially your physical trainer and your coach, Jeff Leishman, how have they helped you sort of shape that plan and shape those habits so that you've got that structure so that, you know, you can build towards where you want to go?
Well, I think they've given me a really good direction. I've always been a pretty ambitious person and I've enjoyed the process of working hard. But golf is not like hockey where like, if you go on the ice for an hour in a hockey rink and you practice and you're in better shape, like, you know, you're going to be a better player, but golf doesn't really work like that. It's not linear, not a linear process where like X amount of hours equals getting better. So, the people around me have definitely given me, I think they've refined my direction in which I work. So that would be either whatever, let's say swing mechanics or a putting routine or whether gym work or whatever it may be, whatever the substance is, they've kind of clarified what I need to do when, and then me having those things kind of already established, then adding not only gives me a lot more clarity, but also increases my buy-in, because if I know I'm doing the absolute right thing for myself, I want to do it that much more because I know I'm going to get some benefit from it. So I would consider Jeff to be, I mean, one of the best in the world at what he does, and incredibly privileged to get guidance from him. And I think definitely getting good, solid, clear direction from him that helps a lot. And Jeff's the type of guy where, if he can't answer your question, he'll find someone who can. And I respect that a lot about him.
I love that. I only have one more for you. I like to ask a lot of players, especially guys getting into the professional game or deep into the professional game. How would you describe your relationship with the game of golf now? Is it purely a business thing? Can you zoom out and be like, hey, it's still fun? You know, what's your relationship with the game?
My relationship with the game is pretty good. I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. Like, I think like any relationship, whether it be with a person or a thing or an activity, I think that will have ebbs and flows. There was a point last year where I really felt like I was struggling with my game and my relationship wasn't that good because I was seeing negative feedback every time I would go try to do this thing that I loved, right? But I mean, obviously you're going to enjoy it more when you're playing well. But right now I would say it's in a good place. I definitely feel more motivated than ever and more driven to go to the golf course. And I'm not sure how that may vary. Like, hopefully as I go into later in bigger stages of my career, because I understand like not everybody on the PGA Tour probably wants to be number one in the world. Not everybody wants the added stress or the added commitment or whatever that may take. But for me right now, I'm definitely in love with the game of golf. And as cliche as it sounds, you hear it every week, but definitely enjoying much more of the process of it. And I think one thing about golf that I really enjoy is just the aspect of self-growth. And that's a lot of fun for me, kind of seeing improvement in different areas, as opposed to just like, oh, I shot 68, it was a good day, or 74, it was a bad day. I kind of look at as long as the pieces of my game are getting better, I find quite a lot of satisfaction in that.
All right, we'll let you go with one more question here. I know you're only 24 at this point. You're still striving towards your goals. But do you feel, in a sense, because of the unique nature of your upbringing, that you provide a little bit of a beacon for other kids from Newfoundland? I know already that you've had someone follow you from Newfoundland to your school. But how do you feel about that as a responsibility in all that you're doing?
I think it's more of a privilege and a responsibility. I haven't been like sat down and told, hey, like you need to represent the province. I haven't had those conversations, but I definitely just try to handle myself well. So in the effect that someone was watching or following from my whole province, hopefully they get a good impression. But yeah, I feel a deep connection to where I'm from. I think that's always going to be the case. And I think that resonates both with me and the people from my province. So I want to represent them really well every single time I tee it up. So whether that means coaching kids that have an interest in the game or supporting junior golf in Newfoundland or doing a good job with media stuff or whatever that may be, I'm happy to do it. I haven't taken on like any official role with that, but if I just want to put Newfoundland in the best light possible and get on as big a stage as I can and represent the people of my home province well, because it really is a cool spot to grow up and very lucky to be from there.
Well, from what I've seen, you've done a great job so far and appreciate you coming on. And it's been a joy to get to know you this year and looking forward to covering you for many years to come on bigger and bigger stages.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Stefan.
Was great, guys. The guy's focus, like we've had a lot of people on here that talk about what they're doing, the work they're putting in, and I've never, like, I was joking, but like I only knew the guy for what, half an hour, and it really sounds like he's got every duck lined right in a row.
Yeah,
every single day, no wasted days. Even like if he has a day off, it's a day off. Like it's
right.
And at 24, like that maturity, it's not something you can teach. It's you either have it or you don't. And I didn't have it. And that's why you and I talk on a podcast every day.
Yeah. I got to see that playing with him down in the Pro-Am in PEI this year and saw his work ethic there, saw his schedule that he had afterwards. And, you know, even guys trying to goad him into, hey, let's go have a drink, let's do this. He's like, nope, I've got my workout to do. I've got my time with my coach. I've got my practice time, everything. He's got it worked out, and not to the point of, you know, overdoing it and being overzealous. It's just, you know, it's all his objectives that he needs to take care of to reach his goals. And, you know, you got to love him for that. And like you said, at 24, to have that maturity, have that foresight, you know, obviously it's already paying off already. And generally it should pay off a lot more in the future.
100%. Let's just wrap up the week. Obviously we have a season long pool, I guess you could call it, going, sure, where we pick a player each week. Can't pick him twice. Can't pick the same player as the other guy each week. And at the end of the season, whoever has the most money wins the grand prize of whatever we decide that moment. Right now, last week I picked Cameron, as I called him, Tringali, however you want to call him.
He, you should call him Mister after he took care of the money for you.
He finished T7 for a smooth $227,813. Not bad for a day of work. You picked the man I wanted originally, which was Aaron Wise, who finished with $58,125 for a T26. That gets us at the season where now I have like Cameron Tringali won me 227,813, and you are at 86,525, which is nothing. The gap is nothing right now. That's no. one missed cut and one top 10, and you know you're way up in the lead.
It's your first cut, so that's not bad.
First cut. I got absolutely destroyed this weekend on Instagram when I posted a pitcher Martin, the hero we deserve, Dylan Dethier's tweet, and it's just him walking down the fairway with the sunglasses on, which is just hilarious. And I got chirped that the first message that comes in just says, "Amazing what a good caddy can do for someone."
Wow.
Just like an absolute dagger.
And here's his two ex caddies, you and Dethier, supporting this guy. Probably the only guys that are wise enough to, you know, have seen the inside, spent the time inside the ropes with this guy. And yeah, you know what? It was awesome to watch. It really was. I mean, it was good to see. And we talked about it before the interview, but you know, it just shows you anything can happen on the PGA Tour. These guys just need the opportunity.
It was real. I'm not going to downplay. It was really cool to watch. It was, you know, somebody, you know, we've obviously don't really talk much anymore, and he's, you know, you got to tighten up your circles. And you know, if I'm on the outside, it's a business, right? It doesn't matter. But yeah, like that's somebody that, you know, gave me a really cool opportunity, whether I deserved it or not. I did not. And now I get to watch him, you know, who's struggled and watched how he's just been himself throughout it, even though he talked about, you know, is golf for me still, and still just soft-spoken as ever, still taking, you know, he did Dethier's podcast from the car before going out for dinner with his girlfriend. And, you know, even just go and listen to that podcast and you will understand why Martin Trainer is so easy to root for. Yeah. In that podcast, he might ask those guys as many questions and almost keeps the podcast going better than the host of the podcast who are journalists asking questions. Like, he's just a good dude. He's, you know, caring dude.
If people want to get familiar with him, I mean, just go back to that podcast from the Canadian Open in 2019 that we did from Buffalo Wild Wing, where, you know, he just walks in, grabs a mic and does his thing. I mean, you know, you turn the pants off everyone else that's there that he meets, just because he is a smart guy. And, you know, after you meet him and you hear his story, and like you said, he's true to himself, you can't do anything but be, you know, happy for the guy.
No. And I hope this is a good stretch. I don't want it, like, people acting like this guy's a make-a-wish kid. He's a PGA Tour winner.
Yeah.
Cameron Tringali isn't a PGA Tour winner. There's a bunch of guys that haven't won on the PGA. Scottie Scheffler, they talked about this guy like he was God's gift to the earth.
Yeah.
That was a one on PGA Tour. Couldn't get done on Sunday. He had a lead on Sunday and choked it away. Right? Like, it's hard to win on the PGA Tour. Shout out to Jason Kokrak, who's just on this stretch of, you know, everyone thought he would become this golfer and it's really hard to do it. Now he is doing it in his 30s. And, you know, I hope Martin can find that. But we got the RSM Classic this week, another week for Martin to potentially find that. And we're going to pick our players this week who we think are going to win or just do well. We get one pick each. I believe I am on the clock this week, Scotty. You are, sir. That not correct?
You are.
I haven't done a ton of research on you know, whose favorite is.
Do you ever?
I work pretty hard. I'll tell you one guy that I'm not picking. I'm absolutely shocked. I think it must just be, hey, it's late in the season. Like, Corey Connors is back in the field. Congratulations to Corey and his wife on the birth of their first child. That's super exciting. But like, the fact that this guy's in the field right now, like, he must be like, I have to get a start. That's really my last big chance.
Yeah. He said he wasn't going to play again until the baby was born. And yeah, you know, he's got to jump in there, but it's going to be difficult. Obviously not going to have a lot of sleep, a lot of practice. So, you know, if someone's going to take him, we'll see.
I will not be taking Corey this week. I'm actually going to take the guy that you're getting nasty, very good odds on this guy. If you want to sprinkle a few dollars, I'm taking Max Homa. I feel like, I haven't heard from Max lately. I think Max has finally realized he's one of the best players in the world. And why can't Max pick it do well this week? I have zero research behind it. Let's just do a quick check here, how he's finished at this tournament, in years past, but you know, 67-1 on Max Homa. who has been playing, you know, had a best year of his career last year, 30 years old. You know, he's kind of cut out the podcast, picked up a win, you know, in his first tournaments this year. Yeah, my pick's Max Homa. Quick research. I don't think he's ever played this tournament.
Good call. Familiar with the course, is he?
Yeah. That's not good.
Hey, you know what? You're taking it based on his ability and his ability to match that to the golf course. It's not always about familiarity, right?
Okay, so last time he's played this tournament,
He missed the cut in 2019. He was plus four.
He missed the cut in 17.
Don't worry though, he beat Tommy Gamey and Tom Lovelady that
okay.
year.
Okay, Max. All right, Max, let's see it, buddy. Let's see. I might have wasted a pick on Max. I should have kept him for the Genesis. But we got to be thinking longer term, maybe.
Yeah, we do.
But I'm taking Max.
I think you're right. We have to be strategic here. I mean, you know, that's the thing we're talking about is, you know, when do you pick the players? Because you only get to use them once and you got to fit them into the spots and maybe you think they're going to be comfortable and because then they're gone, you know, and they're not going to win you any money after that. So, you know, I looked briefly at Scheffler because obviously he's on a bit of a run. He played well here last year, but I think this is the time I'm actually going to make use of Webb Simpson, believe it or not.
Wow, Webb early.
Yeah, Webb early. He finished third here two years ago. I think he's a guy that will always make some money there, and I'm sort of going to bet more on making money versus trying to make the big pick that is always going to get the win. I'm picking for a win, hopefully, but I'm trying to make sure it cash checks more than anything. And I think Webb's a lock to make a cut and make some money.
So, you know, that's what Aaron Wise is known for. Just cash and checks all every time, right? Like just big cash.
Hey, it worked for Tringali, right?
That's what he is known for. That's all that guy does is cash checks that don't have first place on them. Right. Same, you know, he's like Chucky Three Sticks.
He's a professional. Chucky Three Sticks won this 2 years ago, by the way.
Well, I could have picked him. Fair enough. But I think Webb's a good pick. I think Webb, could be a good pick for like the Masters and stuff this year too. Like Webb's good. I feel like Webb's got another major in him.
I really do.
That guy is so sneaky hot and so sneaky consistent.
He's the Bernhard Langer of the junior set. There's a comparison for you.
Wow. I think that's pretty good. I think we could, yeah, there we go. All right, Bernhard Langer. I mean, if you could just rub in the damn sunscreen, people would like him way. We got the RSM Classic this week. We have the race to Dubai this week. It drives me nuts every single time when, like, Colin Morikawa is leading. Is he leading or is he second?
I think he's leading, actually.
And how many tournaments has he actually played on that are European Tour?
Probably like one.
Yeah, maybe one, maybe like the Scottish Open or whatever he played before going to the Open Championship last year. So,
We do have the conclusion this week as well for the LPGA and the CME Group Tour Championship. You know, based on the playoff and how the top players have sort of come to the top of the game, the playoff from last week, and seeing those players in there. What are your expectations? I mean, we've got a $1.5 million first prize for this event. Are we just going to, you know, hang our hopes on Nelly and just expect her to win? Or what are your thoughts?
I gave her a hard time earlier. I think Lexi might have learned something. I feel like Lexi's going to come out angry. She's going to have her damn glove on the putting green, but the putts are going to go in. And that's really what's held her back. If you think back to that US Open, right? Think about that final stretch of holes where she was just missing everything. This week, same thing. Was just missing some putts that needed to go in. So Nelly's obviously, she's not even the favorite. Actually, Jin Young Ko is the favorite somehow.
Well, she won it. She won it last year. So obviously they make her the favorite. She won it by, five shots last year.
But I like Lexi's odds at 19-1. So that's where I'm going. Do you, if you were a betting man, where are you throwing your $5?
You know what, I wouldn't go against Lexi. I mean, the fact that, you know, she was T5 here last year, it's hard to ignore those players. I would not be shy though about Brooke Henderson, the fact that she finished fifth last week at the Pelican, finished 65-65 at the Pelican, got her seventh top 10 of the year. She's sleeping in her own bed at her condo in Naples this week. She's feeling comfortable. Her parents are down visiting. She's feeling a little bit more confident on the putting green. So I would expect her to contend for sure.
$5 on Brooke would win you a smooth $105. So, hey, that's a nice bottle of scotch. There you go. Any names on the list that, you know, shock you? You want them to play well? Like, you know, Hannah Green, she just won $1 million the other day.
Yeah.
Without playing. Nice.
How's that?
No, without playing. That's pretty sweet. Does Nate get a cut of that?
I don't know. Actually, that was the first thing I thought of. I was actually looking at Nate's story and he was like having dinner someplace or whatever. I'm thinking,
Maybe he got a cut of it.
Is he getting a piece of that or what?
Here's 100K.
We may have to ask him on that one.
Yeah. Sure. Here's 100K, right? Yeah. Ryan O'Toole, you know what, in the finals after picking up her first, 226-1 if you want to sprinkle there. Sophia Popov 201-1. Like, there's some value in Sophia. I don't know how great she's been on the latest stretch, but that's a lot of money.
What's Celine Boutier going for? That might be a one that could be interesting. The fact that, you know, she won not long ago and she could be a contender there for sure.
Toronto Maple Leafs to 1, 1967-1.
Wow. Well,
67-1. Okay. 19, but yeah. Yeah. So, I think there's some good odds in there, but I think the favorites are the favorites for the reason. I mean, you got Aria sitting there at 46-1. Like, she can come out of nowhere. She's been cold.
True. Yeah. She has been cold for sure.
You know, Jung Lee 6, 34. Like, there's some players in here. I there's a lot. I don't know.
That's the one I'm going to have my eyes on, I think, more this weekend. I mean, we're going to obviously see some stuff from Dubai early in the morning, but thankfully, because this is the wrap-up for the LPGA, we're going to see more live coverage of the LPGA this weekend. So I think that's the one I'm going to be watching the most. I mean, the players are pretty excited, you know, for that $1.5 million prize for sure.
I like it. Why don't we hit the mailbag, though, and wrap up the episode, Scotty?
All right, let's get to it. Actually, you know what? Number one question in the mailbag. We just did it. Who are your picks to win the CME Group Tour Championship on the LPGA?
If you got to pick one, I got Lexi. And who do you got? Who's your one?
I'll take Brooke. All right, we'll go with that. How convenient was that? All right, number two. What's the next frontier in golf coaching and development? Any thoughts on that? Or you want me to handle that one?
Pure feel. No data. We're going to get rid of TrackMan. Why don't you get it?
How's that working for you?
Well, there's a reason.
Yeah.
What did I say to you? I'm not paying you to get worse at golf.
There you go. That was a great way to close the lesson. I think one of the biggest things is probably just advancements in things like motor skills acquisition, which sounds like a big, you know, mumble of words. It's basically new frontiers in sports of finding different ways to help people acquire new skills. And I think there's a lot of study that's going on in that sort of environment, not specifically just in golf, but I think it's bleeding over into golf now. And teachers are looking at what they maybe have done in the past and realize that there's more efficient ways to help people out at all levels. And I think that's sort of the next frontier. A lot of people would, you know, kind of, you know, put the onus on a certain technology or things like that, but it's just something as basic as, you know, teaching people how to learn better more than anything.
Fair enough. I'm going to take your word for it.
All right. Speaking of Brooke, someone asked, how do you rate Brooke Henderson's season this year versus other years?
I mean, I'm not going to rate anybody in the last 2 years.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to judge anybody. It's based on hard. That.
Yeah. And I said, and I don't have science behind it, but like maybe there technically might be, but like I thought it was more difficult for the women to come back, knowing, hey, like the coronavirus could affect their bodies in harder ways of like, hey, like how does this affect, you know, if I wanted to become a mother one day and things along those lines. And I know like Brooke was a little nervous coming back to play golf with everything going on. Everybody should be. Deadly virus going around. It was a pandemic. And yet she picked up a win. She had a second in there. She had a fifth in there. You know, a couple. It wasn't like, if we actually break it down, it wasn't her best year. Like, no. And like the year prior and the 2 years prior to that, you know, like every week, if you wanted to make money, you just bet Brooke top 10 and you're making money.
Yeah.
Right. And she didn't have many top 10s. So she
had seven of them this year. So
yeah, like, and that's in the wraparound season or whatever, right? The two seasons combined.
Nope, from, that was just in the 1 year.
Fair enough. I'll take your word for it. Whatever. but either way, like, it's not as much as what she's used to. But at right. the end of the day, they pay you to win. That's where you're going to make the most money. You pick up win. Who cares about what you did in the other tournaments? Because that's really all that really matters. It's better to have that Martin Trainer career. Pick up a win, miss a bunch of cuts, pick up another win, doesn't really matter. But she is still so consistent. So not her greatest, but I'm not judging her. It's thinking it's a bad thing.
No, not at all. And as you said, she got a win. And I think if anybody said at the start of the year, you're going to get a win this year, you'd say that's going to be a good year. And, the fact is the money that she won last week put her over the top for $1 million in earnings for the fifth time in her career. That's really of six full seasons out on tour. So, it's much harder to make $1 million in the LPGA tour than it is on the PGA tour, obviously.
Yeah.
Credit to her. She got it done when she did play. She obviously had a reduced schedule and she still performed. You can't win every week. Nobody can. Even Nelly won four times. She didn't win all her tournaments. But I would look out for Brooke this week. Who knows? She might get her second of the year right then.
The other thing just to highlight, think about where you were at 24, right? Like, that is a very much a crossroads for a lot of people, where you really start to develop a lot of self-awareness. And I understand that she probably had to develop it much earlier based on the career choice, but like, life is going to be changing, right? Like, maybe she has someone in her life that, and I have no relationship with Brooke off the top, so I'm just purely speculating, but maybe she has someone in her life that she wants to spend more time with, right? Maybe she's recognizing golf doesn't need to be every single day. And that's really that stretch where you either really go Tiger Woods and you go all in and everything else can go on the wayside and people write books about you that you don't like because you treated people like crap because all you cared about is winning golf tournaments, or you realize, hey, there's more to life than golf and money. I'm not saying Brooke's doing either or. I'm just saying it is that point in your life where those things really do kind of come to the forefront of how much time do you really want to be spending at the golf course and what is your relationship in golf going to be like. So we talked about with Blair earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And they're both 24, so I think it was a comfortable year for her as far as what she needed to do in her life. She balanced a lot of things, and as a result, I don't think she would look back and say it was a bad year. So we'll let it play out for another week, and we're on to next year for her.
And she could win, and we'll be back here next week saying we're idiots. So
yeah, exactly. All right, speaking of your buddy Martin Trainer, someone asked, is Martin Trainer's fine play last week because of what he learned at the 2019 Canadian Open? That question came from a good friend of ours.
But the answer is yes, absolutely. What he learned is, you get what you pay for. Zach Smith is a tour caddy and he's really good at what he does, and he has a really good bucket hat and he's tall, and he can see, he's not the short little guy that doesn't know what he's doing. So he absolutely learned, I can't just take these Canadian kids that are hiding in the parking lot, let them carry my bag. I gotta get somebody that knows what they're doing. So I'll take credit. I showed him, the bottom end.
Bravo. Bravo. All right. That's a good way to look at it. We'll move on.
Have any thoughts? Eh?
No, not at all. Hey, if you think that's
a lose-lose situation,
it pretty much is. So yeah, we'll leave that one at that one, but I liked your answer. That was a good one. Who's your early favorite to win the 2022 Masters? Wow. As we talked about, it's been a year since the fall Masters and we had another Masters in between, but this is early Masters talk for April 22 already.
Yeah, it's crazy. So just quickly, on like a odd standpoint, John Rahm is currently the favorite with Jordan Spieth right after DJ, Justin Thomas, Rory,
Bryson, the usual Brooks. Suspects.
Yeah, all the usuals up there. I think it's not going to be Hideki. Like, there's no way we're going back to back there. And I'm going to actually pick Xander. I think he's got some demons to conquer from last year. His ball striking is good. His putting.
Was he not my pick this year? I think he was my pick this year already for 21, which didn't work out.
So, I mean, I like that. I feel like DJ has like a bone to pick that people almost like, that wasn't a real Masters.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. The problem with DJ and Augusta, it came at the perfect time last year for him because he was on that stretch where he was just so good going into right. it.
Yeah.
And then he does it it takes him this while to ramp up. So if he comes out flying early in the season next year, watch out for DJ. But like early on, I want to see Xander conquer that kind of choke job that he pulled out on 16 and find a way to get it done. So that's my early pick. What about you?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think Cam Smith was another one of my favorites last year as well. I still like his game around there. I still like his form. He was in the mix. I think he learned a lot from, you know, his performances there so far. Definitely can't discount, Corey Connors, who was T8 there last year. Hard to make him a favorite for sure, but Shoffley definitely strong. But you know what? I'm gonna stick with Smith, T10 there last year, and I think he's only gonna get better there. And if he doesn't win in 22, he's probably gonna win it in 23.
What about Tiger Woods odds right now at 51-1? You're not gonna get better.
It's not going to get better.
It's only going to go down. And chances are, if he's playing in the tournament, he's going to be able to compete in the tournament. Right. And if he's not, you're just getting your money back. Like, they're just going to refund your money. And there might, it's a valuable bet.
It's actually not a bad strategy at those odds. I mean, there's not a lot to lose there for sure. All right.
Well, depending on what you bet.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I hear you, but I mean, realistically, and I mean, do we even want to put that out there? Do we realistically think, you know, we're sitting here in November, he's limping his way around LA. Do we really think he's going to be in form to play in April?
I hope y'all are ready, because come, you know,
by, I mean, if there's somebody that can do it.
Yeah, and by the time you finish this pretzel, he's going to be Scott's eating pretzels in the middle of our conversation. He's a couple weeks from now, the Hero World Challenge. He'll be there. And you know, leading off Golf Channel, leading off Sports Center, leading off every single thing, leading off CP24 will be Tiger Woods press conference when he's at the Hero World Challenge. And you're going to find out where he stands. He won't tell anybody if he's playing or when he's playing. It will be the usual. But you will be crazy to think, like, if he's seen hitting golf balls at the Hero World Challenge, I would say watch out. That's what I'll say, because that means he's happy. He's willing to show his game in front of people, because like right now, if he's hitting golf balls, which rumor is he has been hitting, chipping, putting, whatever.
It's around his house.
Yeah. If you see video of it, then he controls the narrative. So I would just say, watch out if you see video of it. That's all I'm saying.
All right. We'll leave that one at that
one. And if you see video of it, those odds are going down. The minute a swing video comes out with him with his leg sleeve on, and it looks like, it doesn't matter if it looks good or not, because people aren't going to know it. He could shank one. That's just a big draw. It's just a big draw.
Yeah.
But if like the odds are going to go down. So if you actually are a believer in Tiger, the odds, it's time
to do it now. All right. Last one to close it out. What change outside of something in the full swing can help a 7 handicap player the most?
See, you could go, you're going to go from a coaching perspective.
Let's hear it from a player perspective. what do you think would help a 7 handicap?
The player perspective. I mean, what I learned from the track, man, is like when I was hitting it and we had the handicap, like threw it like out of 10 handicap. And I don't think I've really been hitting it that much worse than I did in previous years. My swing really hasn't changed much, but what I was able to do was course management and short game. Like, it was like, I knew not to tack all these different pins. I knew to kind of take the big areas. And anytime I've gone out with buddies that are good players, 7 handicaps, you know, somewhere in that 5 to 10 range, like I would say I'm cutting at least, like, they're going to hit their handicap if they're listening to me tell them, like, where to go, the distance to kind of go into a pin, because they don't think about it. They look at the pin, they go, okay, 150 to the pin. Is it a back pin? Cool, I'm hitting 150. Oh, it flew over the pin, and now I'm short-sided, where it's like, no, let's take the look. Like, those things really, in my opinion, both of whatever I say and you say is going to help, but that is the biggest thing, is just course management, just making smart decisions, not trying to be a tour player and hit it to a foot each time, because they don't even do that.
No, actually, I'm going to applaud you for that answer, because it's very much on the vein that I'm talking about, because it's exactly that. I mean, if there's something that you're going to handle that's not, physical as far as your actual swing itself, it's recognizing something like your dispersion pattern and fitting that dispersion pattern into the green, for an example, or the area that you're going to drive golf balls in, which is really a lot of it is the, you know, that's the core of what Scott Fawcett does with Decade. Mm-hmm. But, I'll work with students. I had one here just yesterday, and we were looking at his 7-iron pattern with his, those shots. They were, kind of average 175 carry. And we looked at it and hit 20 shots, and, it's 18 yards wide left and right as far as his dispersion. And we actually spent some time, we went virtually onto a green and basically picked out an 18 yard wide area with the depth, which was about 12 yards as far as front to back dispersion, and fit that sort of pattern inside the green to pick out the target that he needed to hit. And I tell you what, we did that on the one green. It was the ninth at Glen Abbey, and there was barely any shot that was not playable in a way that he couldn't make par.
And he probably hit shots to a foot, even though he was aiming
accidentally, right? Exactly. Because your dispersion is your dispersion, whether you're, seven handicapper or you're the best player in the world, you're going to have a pattern that way. So, the whole goal here is to eliminate bogeys. It's not to make more birdies. The problem for most players when they analyze it, it's not making more birdies, and you will make birdies. They will come, because as you said, you're going to still accidentally hit a shot that's close and you're going to make that. It's just making sure that the bad ones that you hit are not putting yourself in situations that you're going to be making doubles and having these big scars on your card. And, generally that's what we see. We see things that come back. If I watch a student in a tournament, I look at, their scorecard, and if all of a sudden it's like, oh, par, 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 triple, it's like, whoa, those are the things that, I don't get too excited over the birdies, but, when I see doubles and I see triples, I wonder why. And chances are, those are big mistakes that are definitely avoidable, not by having a perfect golf swing, but making a decision that anybody can make, whether you're 7 or you're 70.
You nailed it. You nailed it.
All right, so that's the mailbag for this week. Thanks, everybody, for sending in those questions. Put out that mailbag every week. Keep them coming. Keep them interesting. Bring us some more hypotheticals. We didn't have any hypotheticals, really, this week in there.
I had one, kind of, where a buddy, he plays at a private club. He's kind of in his late 20s, and he wanted to know your opinion. He said, basically, what is too much? Like how much is too much for a round of golf? So if you look at it this way, from a membership standpoint, so you're at a private club, he's saying, like, if I play 80 rounds a year, which is a lot of golf in Canada, if you were year round, that's fine. But in Canada, that is a whole whack of golf, because you're stretching that into
every second. That's every second day.
Exactly. How much is too much for a round? So he was saying, based on his club, if he played 80 rounds a year, it was, and walking, it's $55 a round. And the course isn't a top 100 golf course in Canada or anything along those lines. What are your thoughts? How much would be is too much?
I think it's so individual, because it depends on how you value that time, as far as how it fits in your life. Some people will pay a membership fee just because that's the place they go from a social aspect of it. That's their number one restaurant that they go to. So it's hard to put a dollar amount on per round and what that value is. It's very individual. I mean, think about it. If it's $55 and he's out there for an average of 4.5 or 5 hours, is $10 an hour too much?
I agree with you, but 80 rounds of golf, you got to really love golf. What if the practice facility isn't great? What if like it's one of those ranges? I say, what if it is? You're trying a private club where you can't hit driver on the range.
Yeah.
Now, does that change things for you? Like,
again, though, that's a value proposition depending on what your needs are. I mean, some people want to go and they want to hit golf balls every single day. They'll pay whatever it takes. And I mean, I bet you there's people at his golf club that pay 10 rounds a year, but they hit golf balls every day. Maybe that's what they love to do. So the value for them is the experience that they get out. There might be people that don't even play a round of golf. They go there because that's their place. They do their business meetings or whatever. So, I mean, it's hard to put it in value. You break it down by the day. Think about it that way. What are you paying per day to be a member there? And does that have that value for you that every day?
I like that more.
So think about that. I mean, if you go every day, say you go to Starbucks every day and you pay $5, you know, let's call it just for a round number. You pay $5 for a drink every single day.
Does it come with pretzels? Is that why?
No, but you think about that.
Yeah.
Does that have, what value is that for you? But then you start to break that down for the year, you know, $5 a day, is that worth it? For, you know, is $15 a day, is $10 a day, where's that value? So not so much looking at it by round, look at it per day and how that fits in your life, because you have the option in most cases, except for some clubs obviously have a capacity, and maybe this year you got, you know, drew out of the ballot and you didn't get a tee time, but you do have an option to make use of that facility every single day. That's your choice. So think of it that way. You know, what is the value per day? And I always think of it that way too, for, you know, when people talk about, you know, going and get coaching and stuff. You know, coaching is not about just that experience of spending that hour with the coach. True coaches are probably interacting more with you outside of that hour. They're also spending time doing other things for you. You know, outside of that hour, whether it's planning what's going to happen, looking at other aspects of your tournament schedule, of you know, lots of other aspects that way. So sometimes the value is not the value. So I think if you're looking at it per round, that's not always the best way to look at it.
I like that. I think he'll like that answer.
Okay. Well, there you go.
We'll find out. Hit the tip of the week while you're at it. You're giving tips about your golf membership. Why don't you give a tip on the golf swing while we're here?
Yeah, just an easy one here. This is something you can do indoors or outdoors. Obviously, this time of year, most people are hitting indoors, so certainly can work on it there. One thing I always try to get people to work on is centered contact all the time. Centered contact in the club face or where the center of gravity is in the club really helps you not only get the golf club from twisting because you're impacting it where it's not going to twist, also helps you provide maximum ball speed. So an easy way to kind of work on that is to build yourself some constraints. A lot of people will do some things like spray the club face, or they'll just try to hit it in the center, and that's what they say, but it's easier to build some actual physical restraints in there. So a simple way to do it, grab a couple of dimes. I know most people don't even know what a dime is these days because they used to Interact or whatever. So sneak into somebody's piggy bank, steal two dimes or two coins of some kind, or sometimes
poker chips,
whatever you need to do. Set up like you're going to hit a shot. Put one of those items outside of the heel, one of those items outside the toe of the club, you know, just a little wider than the club head. Put the golf ball in between and try to make contact so that you don't hit those coins or markers or whatever that you have. Try to do that maybe 10 times in a row. See how often, you know, you can do that within, you know, 10 swings. If it's too wide and you're able to do it very easily, narrow it up, make it smaller and smaller, build some restraints in there, and chances are you're going to start hitting the ball closer to the center of the club face.
I like it. Easy drill to do at home. I like it. All right, Scotty, that's it for the week. Thank you to Blair Bursey for coming on here. Player, watch out. Watch out. He's focused. I appreciate that. And a good guy. I'm looking at Max Homa this weekend and Lexi Thompson. You're looking at Webb Simpson and Brooke Henderson. Any final thoughts for the week before we wrap it up and, you know, start to watch golf a little bit more? I took a break and I'm back. I want to watch some golf. I'm looking forward to this week. So, hey, if you like PGA Tour golf, this is your last chance for a while until we go to Hawaii.
Yeah, hopefully we've got some of this golf live more than anything. Not looking forward to the silly season events because they're already starting to talk about some of those. But this is a big weekend for the LPGA. Huge prize for them with that $1.5 million. And really, that's what I'm probably going to watch more than anything.
I like it. All right, let's leave it there. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. On behalf of Scum and Cloud, I'm Stephen Dieter. We'll chat with you then.